What a great event. Thank you, thank you, thank you. My name is Charlie, if you're new here, and we help support and we put on the entire evening event. It's really cool, and I got to hand it out to Jeff Mahal, who makes it happen, because guy's a stud, and people like Liz Walton and Val Pachinko and so many others that serve, and spread the love of Christ. I think we've shared this with you many times, and we do this for a lot of reasons, but the primary reason is that people will discover that there's a church in their community that loves them, that cares for them, that tells them that they matter. Here's what I know about every single person in this valley, in this region. At some point in their life, multiple points in their life, they're going to hit a crisis. They're going to hit a wall. They're going to hit an opportunity where they go, I don't know which way to turn. I cannot fix this. My money can't fix it. My intelligence can't fix this. A new house can't fix it. Buying a new car can't fix it. Alcohol can't fix it. I don't know what to do. Before they go out and have an affair or try something stupid, they, you know, there were some people with yellow shirts on. They told me I mattered. Maybe we should try church. Hey, spouse, what do you think about going to church this weekend? We could go to that one with those people. Oh, yeah, those were nice people. And they'll walk through the door. So maybe you're here this morning. Maybe you've hit your end at the end of your rope. We want to welcome you and let you know that you do matter. And hopefully today and as we try to pour into your life and you allow God, something bigger than yourself, something outside of yourself, to bring the answers that you're looking for, because he really does love you. So we're going to finish out today our leadership series, and I hope you're ready to go. Hope you've got your notes out and you're prepared to take them, because I've got some good stuff for you today. One of the things that I've challenged with in much of my life in leading, I took a church at 26 years old, 25 years old, my first church. And I didn't have the first clue. I didn't know how to lead people. I didn't know how to get people organized. Didn't know how to get people motivated. Didn't know how to get people from here to there. And we had a similar situation, an area where there was a lot of people that needed God. And needed his love. And what I discovered was I was able to get people to follow me. I think sometimes they were chasing me. But I was able to get people to follow me. But what I wasn't able to do was to transfer that into them becoming leaders themselves. So I found myself always making all the decisions, always doing all the stuff, have my hand in all the pie, and just running crazy, 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 crazy. And I go, oh man, this is not sustainable. And I can work harder, I can work faster, I can work more hours, but somewhere along the way, this thing is going to lit up. And I will not be able to, the organization will not grow any further. You may be on a team. You may be feeling like that in your home. Like, man, I'm doing all the work around here, I'm doing all the stuff. And how can we break through this? I discovered something that many of us as leaders can get people to follow us, but few of us can get people to actually become leaders themselves. And that's what I want to talk about this morning from the greatest leader of all time. His name is Jesus. If you're going to get people to not just follow you, but to lead with you, how are you going to attract those leaders? How are you going to attract those other people in your life? Well, number one, you have to have a life of integrity. Followers will follow people without integrity, but leaders will not. Look at this scripture. The man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out. Leaders can spot a phony. Leaders can spot a phony Christian. Leaders can spot a phony politician. They can spot phony leaders. Other leaders will call you out, and they won't follow you. Followers will clamp on to a phony leader. Look at this next verse in Proverbs. It says, like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of gifts he does not give. Anyone know anybody like that? Ever met anyone like that? Right now, in the political world, they are promising the world, hey, free everything. Yeah, you'll get free this and free this and free this, and you just go down the list, right? And I watch this and I go, these guys are like clouds without wind or rain. They're making boasts that they're never, I'm smart enough to know that they're never going to be able to pay for that. That is just phony baloney. And yet, a lot of people, hey, I'll follow, wow, I want free stuff, I want free stuff, I want free stuff. Long on promises, short on performance. When we were doing the new building, I'm so excited about our new building. And I am trusting God, I hope you're praying with me, that we'll be in before the end of the year. I think it's in that sights, all right, for the year. We'll have just a short window here where we're going to be out of this place, where we're not really sure we'll be homeless. And we've got some people with some nice RVs and different vans and stuff. We're spot down by the river that we'll be able to have church on the weekends. But we're so excited about it. This thing is a $9 million project. We needed to raise $2.5 million at the beginning. And I had a couple people come to me and say, "Hey, Pastor, the two largest commitments came to me personally, said, here's how much I'm going to pledge." Both of them, guess how much they gave? Goose egg. And here's what's crazy is they left the church. I can't even look them in the eye and go, "Hey, cloud without rain." You know, these are supposed to be heavy hitters. People that, "Oh, clouds without rain." People that make promises. You ever get convicted of the promises you make to your kids? "Yeah, I'll take you fishing. Hey, we'll go to the zoo. Oh, yeah, that'll be great." And the kids hold on to that. "Hey, Dad, we going fishing?" "Oh, I'm a little tired right now." "Oh, maybe next weekend." And next weekend becomes the next weekend. And they look at you and go, "I'll follow him because he's my dad, but I'm not following him because he's a leader of leaders." In order to be a leader, men must have confidence. Women must have confidence in you. So here's a question. There at the bottom of your notes, you look down at the bottom at this point, it says, "How honest am I?" And rate yourself 1 through 10. 1, man, if it's convenient, if it gets me a little further ahead, I'll be honest, but otherwise, you know, I'll take the road. If it fills my... Give yourself a 1. You know what? I'm a man, I'm a woman of integrity. If it comes out of my mouth, you can count on it. I'll do my best, even if it hurts, to keep my promises. 10. Number 2, humility. Humility. You're going to get leaders to follow you. People to actually take on the responsibility. You have to have an attitude of humility. Arrogance, the Bible says, will bring your downfall. But if you are humble, you'll be respected. Again, followers will follow arrogant people. Have that sense. Leaders won't. Yeah, follow them. Again, you can spot them, and followers go, "Oh no, they're great, they're great." How do you say arrogant? She's so stuck on herself. Let me ask you, are you the only one who can make decisions on your team, in your organization, in your family? You're the only one who can make the decisions? You're just so set on yourself that I'm the smartest guy in the room. I've got to make all the decisions. That's an arrogance about you. If you're going to get as much done as you can through your leadership, you have to replicate yourself in the people around you. What the Bible teaches us is to give responsibility and authority. Leaders who have followers give tasks. Tasks. "Hey, you do this. Hey, you do this. You do this. You do this." Leaders that have leaders give responsibility and authority. Here's your responsibility, and you have the authority to make those decisions. However, our pride, much of the time, keeps us from doing that for 2 reasons. Number 1, what if they do a better job than I do? What if they make better decisions than I do? What if they take it further than I could have taken it? And my pride won't allow that, so I'll keep my fingers and my hands in that pie, and I'll keep this person from making decisions, taking the authority or the responsibility, because I don't want them to get the credit and make me look bad. Arrogance. The second reason our pride gets in the way is because, what if they fail? What if they blow it? Then it's going to look bad on me. And there's no way I'm going to let anything look bad at me. So I'm going to keep my hands. I'm going to keep them veiled. I'm not going to let them take the responsibility or the authority over that thing. And I'll just keep this thing going. And you've hit your lid. And followers will do tasks for you. Leaders will say, "Hey, I don't have any authority. I don't have any responsibility. I'll go find somebody else. Find another team to work on." The greatest leaders don't just give tasks. Jesus said it like this, the greatest leader to ever walk the planet, The greatest leader ever walked the planet. He said, it's better for you that I go away. What? No, you got to be here, Jesus. We need you here. You're the guy doing this, and you're the guy doing this, and you're the guy doing this. And whenever we need help, we turn to Jesus. And he goes, yeah, guys, that's not the way this game's going to be played. If we're going to change the world, if we're literally going to change the world, it cannot happen all through me. So it's better if I go away. They're going, why? Well, look at John 14. He says this. He says, I tell you the truth. Anyone who believes in me will do the same works that I've done. You're actually going to do the things that I've done and even greater works. Why? Because you won't keep turning your head towards me. You'll recognize the Spirit of God is in you. The gift of God is in you. You'll allow that gift to work. And the people that are on your team, the people that are in your home, the people that are in your clubs, the gift of God is in them. Allow it to work. Release it in them. And if they fail, you take the responsibility. That's a humble attitude. Say, I'll take that one. And if they succeed, nice job. Way to go. Hey, man, take it on. Hey, you get the promotion. Humility. Humility. One develops followers, the other develops leaders. Rate yourself on humility. Where do you fit on there? Hey, listen, I'm not gonna look at your notes here. So here's a thought. Be honest. Just give yourself that's cool. Number three, priorities. Priorities. Where is your focus? What are the priorities? Follower, follow somebody with mediocre priorities. Leaders will follow those who have good goals. Proverbs 11 says like this, if your goals are good, you will be respected. Proverbs 14 says, you will earn the trust and respect of others if you work for good. Where are you placing your time, your energy? The average American lives approximately 25,550 days. 25,550 days. I've used about 40,000 of my days, just to tell you. Right? And I look back on that and I go, wow, two-thirds of my life. Days are gone. How did I spend those? Sure, followers will follow me if I'm wiggling around, but leaders will say, do you know where you're going? Where's your focus? What are your priorities? So let me tell you this. If you live to be 70 years old, all right, 23 years of your life will be, guess what? Sleeping. Anybody following you asleep, right? Some of you fall asleep in here, but none of you are following sleeping. 17 years of your life are doing work. Someone last night said, stuck in traffic. 9 years of your life watching TV. 9 years of your life. Six years of your life playing, vacations, hanging out. 6 years. 6 years of your life traveling. 6 years of your life eating. 2 years of your life just getting dressed in the morning. 2 years. Oh. And 1 year of your life going to church. If you're a follower of Christ, 1 year of your life spent with God in his house. What are you doing with your years? Where's your focus? Where's your priorities? What are you doing with your life? Leaders who develop followers. All right, let me stop. You ever heard of the Pareto principle? Pareto principle. You might want to Pareto, Pareto. It's the 80-20 rule. 20% of the people in church give 80% of the money. It's not just in church. It could be in your club, organization. 20% of the people give 80% of the money. 20% of the people in church do 80% of the work, right? Volunteers. It's not 20%. 20% of the people at the church picnic eat 80% of the food. The 80-20 rule. It's a basic principle. You can put it on almost any organization, and you're going to be generally in the right spot. Here's what leaders of followers do. They take 80% of their time, and they spend it with the bottom 20% of the people. Why? Because the bottom 20% of the people are the most needy people. You're always wanting something in your workplace. You always got that guy. You're having to go in and help him out again. And your time is being sucked away by the bottom 20%. And you're taking 80% of your time and you're spending it there. A leader who develops leaders changes that. I will spend 80% of my time with the top 20% in my organization, in my church, in my club. I'm going to pour into those people. I've got to focus my time. I've got to set my priorities and say, hey, I'm going to spend my time with those who are going to give the greatest return. Where are your priorities? Constantly spending your time. And why? Why do we do that? Because it actually is it's another pride thing. It makes us feel better. Oh, these people need me. Oh, hey, look what I've done. To spend your time with the top 20%, you got to be on your game. We'll talk about that in a minute. So it's actually harder to do, but the return is so much greater. Which brings, rate yourself on that. Where do you spend your, how many years have you wasted? Hey, get up, man. I'm going to focus my time, my energies, my priorities are going to be set. Number four, I will grow my leadership capacity. I'll grow my leadership capacity. This is the Jethro principle. Jethro was Moses' father-in-law. Father-in-laws are good for something, guys. Jethro set a good standard for us father-in-laws. And he came to Moses. Jesus, the greatest leader of all time, Moses, arguably greatest leader in the Old Testament, led 2 million people out of slavery into almost the promised land. Got him right to the edge. 2 million people. Incredible feat. Venerated Moses. And as the story goes, they're there in the desert trying to make their way to the promised land, and the people are coming up to him. 2 million people. Moses, hey, this is going on. Hey, Moses, what's going on over here? Oh, Moses, we don't have enough feed for our cattle. Hey, Moses, we don't have enough water for our sheep. Hey, Moses, we don't have enough shoes for our kids. Hey, Moses, we don't have. What do we do? Hey, this person stole my stuff. Hey, Moses. And he is going day and night, staying up early in the morning, late into the evening, trying to handle all the people's problems. And he is whipped. And Jethro comes along and he says, Moses, you're an idiot. Now, that's the CAS version, Charlie Andrew Salmon. But the Bible actually says it like this. Moses, what you're doing is dumb. What you're doing is not right. You cannot keep doing this. And he goes on and he gives Moses some instructions. Let me read it to you. It's there on the screen behind me. Moses' father-in-law said, this is no way to go about it. You're going to burn out and the people right along with you. They're waiting in line, trying to get you to help them. You can't help them. They're waiting the next day. Everybody's going to burn out. You're going to burn out the organization. We're going to burn up here in the desert. This is way too much for you. You can't do it alone. Yes, you've got 2 million followers. But Moses, you need some leaders. Listen to me. Let me tell you how to do this so that God will be with you and be there for the people before God, but let the matters of concern be presented to God. All right? Yes. God's our ultimate source. So let's go to him. Your job is to teach them. Pour into them. Focus on that top 20%, the rules and instructions to show them how to live and what to do. And then you need to keep a sharp eye out for competent men, competent people, men who fear God, men of integrity, first rule right there, men who are not corruptible, and appoint them as leaders. Give them authority and responsibility. This is Jethro instructing Moses, the smart leader Moses. Organized, check this out, by thousands, by hundreds, by fifties, by tens. So you're going to have leaders over 1,000, leaders over hundreds, leaders over 50s, leaders over 10. Let me ask you, what kind of leader are you? Are you a leader over 1,000, over 150? What kind of leader? When I ask this in other groups, the answer is usually people put themselves at a 6 or a 7. We're in there, 6 or 7. If you were, let's say, a 9 or a 10, like the top leader, just the penultimate, right there at the top, what kind of leaders do you think you would have around you, your 9 or 10? You're probably going to attract 9s or 10s. You're going to have other top leaders that are going to be around you. Hey, You're going to attract people who have that level of leadership ability. Let's say you're a five or a six. What kind of leaders do you think you're going to attract around you? Probably fours or fives, right? You're not going to attract a nine or a ten. They're going to look at you and go, well, you know, I'm going to find somebody who's got a little bit more going for them, a little bit greater leadership capacity. I'll hang around them. Every time you up your capacity, let's say you go from a five to a six, you've gone up 10% in your leadership ability. 10% in your capacity. Six or seven, another 10%. Every time you go up, it's 10%. But here's what's wild. It's not a set 10%. It is an exponential kind of curve. Because think about it like this. Every time you go up in your leadership, you attract another level of leader around you. And their level of leadership is up 10%. So you have multiplied that by the amount of leaders that are around you. That 10% keeps going. It's an exponential curve. How did Moses figure this thing out? Following the Jethro principle. Began to find these people that come around. Oh, this guy. And he gave him authority and responsibility. Took the hit for them when they failed. Stood before God and said, God, put the blame on me. Talk about the ultimate. Taking responsibility. And sure enough, he became the greatest leader of the Old Testament. Rate yourself. Are you growing in your capacity? Are you saying, hey, I'm a five. I need to get to a six. I need to get to an eight. Here's my lid. I'll be set with fours or fives around me. Where are you at? Number five, recognize ability. Recognize ability. What does this mean? You cannot lead everybody the same. You can't lead everybody the same. It's a fallacy that we have. It started, I don't know when in the United States, but somewhere along the way, we got this idea that fairness means treat everybody the same. So we do this thing now in Little League, everybody gets a ribbon, everybody gets a trophy, right? We don't even keep score. Oh no, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. We've got to be fair. And so we're just this idea of fairness. And I understand it. I understand, man. I get it. You just look at these little kids. They go, oh, I didn't get a trophy. And they feel so bad. And we don't want them to feel bad because nobody can feel bad. And it's a bad thing. And so let's just give everybody a prize. And it's great. But this is not a biblical principle. It is not a biblical principle. If you don't like it, take it up with God. All you have to do is read the parable of the talents. Let me give you one line in it from Matthew 25. To one, the master gives five talents, to another two, to another one. And why? Why? To each according to their what? Ability. You don't have the same ability as the person next to you. You need to just admit it. Everybody's different. Everybody's got different levels of ability. And these guys went their way. They didn't sit there and went, hey, you got five. That's not fair. Look at your team, and here's what happens. Leaders will watch you as you give away responsibility, authority, you give away tasks, you give away stuff, and you start being, oh, we got to be fair. And you have people with a limited ability in a particular area, but trying to be fair, you give them a responsibility. Leaders are going, why are you doing that? That's going to tank the organization. Yeah, I know, but they haven't really got a hold. Let me put it like this. I tried this last night with women's soccer, and all the women's soccer lovers are not here. They're watching whatever it is right now, and I have no idea what the score is. I'm sure it's 0-0. But it tanked. It tanked. So let me change it. Anybody remember the 90 Bulls? Chicago Bulls, right? Phil Jackson, the coach. Can you imagine? We're in the last game of the playoffs. Down by 2 points. We got to hit a three to win. Phil Jackson calls timeout. 2.5 seconds left on the clock. They huddle over, and he's drawing X's and O's on his little chalkboard there, and he's got it all going on. They're all, yeah. And everybody in the team knows. You got one play. Why are you doing all the X's and O's, Phil? We got one play. And at the end, he says, get the ball to Michael. Right? Get the ball to Jordan. And here's this guy. You know, he steps up off the bench. Excuse me. What? We got to get back. No. I got one coach. Can I just mention? I hate to bother you, but you know, I, I've been on the bench like the whole game. And I haven't really got much playing time. And just to be fair, could I take the last shot? Sit down. Take one for the team on the bench, right? Is your mindset for the team, for the organization, for what God has called us to do as a church? Or are you here because you want to be seen? You want to be known. As a leader, you recognize ability. Now, you help build them up, you help grow them up, you help coach them up. But you recognize ability. You don't give somebody with limited ability super high responsibility. And when we do that, leaders will not follow us. You know, in church, it's a tough deal. Because church is supposed to be, oh, all love, all grace, all wonderful. And yes, 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 yes. Pastor David, he's got to deal with it. And I feel for him, man. Hey, Pastor, God has given me a wonderful voice. And I just love to sing to Jesus. I should be your lead vocalist. And he listens to him and he goes, ouch, you're not that good. I just love to sing to Jesus. Great, go sing for him, but not for us. Right? And it goes against the grain of our culture. And it's tough. Right? It's hard. But as leaders, we have to recognize ability and coach them up to where they are better than they were. But we don't put them in places where they're going to tank the organization or the team. Number four, expectations. Expectations. Leaders of followers have low expectations, low entrance, low commitment. Leaders of leaders have huge expectations, high commitment. Jesus, greatest leader of all time, he looks at these fishermen, these guys who are just nobody in the eyes of the world. And he looks at him and says, guys, I'm going to make you fishers of men. Now notice he didn't say, hey, you're now fishers of men. He said, I'm going to make you fishers of men. You're not there yet, but hey, hang out with me for 3 years and you're going to get there. And guess what? We're going to change the world. But here's the expectation. You're going to go from a fisher of fish to a fisher of men. But here's the deal. Look what he said in John. He said, then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple, you're going to be one of my guys, one of my fishers of men. You must deny yourself and take up your cross and follow me. What a huge, huge ask. I am asking you, if you're going to follow me, if you're going to change the world, if you're going to make a difference in this valley, you got to lay down your life. Lay down your rights. Lay down your sense of fairness. Come and give it all up. Now, I'm not looking for a 99%er. I'm looking for a 100%er, he says. You can't almost die on the cross. You put yourself on there and you say, God, I'm all in for you. Jesus, you went all in for me. I am all in for you. And some of you at Church on the Ridge, you've been coming here for a long time and you've been kind of, you know, one hand on the nail. I hang around the cross, but I'm not getting on the cross. And I love you, and I love you, and I love you. But Jesus said, it's time to get on the cross. You're going to follow me. I didn't say it. He said it. You're going to follow me, man. Give it up for him and watch. You can't. What if you gain the whole world, but you lose your soul? He says, what are you giving up? What are you giving up? Nothing. The trade is worth it. It's worth it. I was traveling Europe, I told you, for our 35th, and went to a few places, and we saw some churches, and the churches there, as I told you, are dying. And I look at the church in America, and most mainline denominations are dying, closing their doors, selling the buildings, turning them into coffee shops, museums, dying. And I read an interesting book about this very thing, called The Churching of America, written by a couple of professors at UW. They said one of the number one reasons why the churches are dying in America is because they've changed their level of commitment. Instead of asking for what Jesus asked for, we say, hey, you can come. You can be whatever you want in our church. Sure, we take everybody. And yeah, of course, we do. We take everybody. Yes. But we don't leave you there. Jesus took these guys who are fishermen and said, hey, I'm going to make you. And he brought them to the place and here's the expectation. And the mainline churches in America, many churches, they're dying because, hey, we're just, you know, man, it's not even church anymore. It's just, we hang out. Might as well call ourselves, you know, Eagles or Kiwanis or just, it's a nice club. Actually, their commitment level is less than what it would take to get into probably Rotary. And it did the very opposite of what they thought it would do. Hey, if we just open the doors and hey, in the very opposite place, the same thing will be true for you. Followers, easy commitment. Leaders, hey, give me something worth living for. Give me something worth dying for. Give me something that will change the world. I'll join that. I'll serve that. I'll be a part of that. Number 7, generosity. Oh, whoa, whoa, rate yourself, sorry. Don't forget your test. Or yet, 1 to 10. You have high expectation of others. Oh, we'll just, okay, that's fine. You did a sloppy job here. Well, we hope you do better next time. Number 7, generosity. He who gives generously to the needy and shows kindness, look at this, this is the way the Bible writes this, will be powerful and respected. And it's not the kind of power that says, ooh, that guy's got power. It just means that guy has leadership. People follow him, respect him. Not because he has money, but because he gives to the poor and the needy. He's generous. Here's a fact. No one ever remembers the people who received, what they received, how they received, or what they received. But people were remembered for what they gave. Do people see you as a stingy person? People see you as a tight-fisted person. If they see you as tight-fisted and stingy, they're going to look at, I'm going to follow him, man. He's greedy. He keeps it all for himself. He's not spreading the love. He's not generous with his heart, with his resources. They see you as someone being generous. Hey, that guy gets it. I want to follow him. I want to work alongside her. So rate yourself. Are you, number one, are you stingy? Are you a cheerful giver? Do you give sacrificially? So many of you gave sacrificially to Cornerstone for Generation to help us build the building. In a few months, we're gonna go for another ask because we've had some cost overruns, some things that we've got to pay for now. We weren't counting on, and we're going to go for another ask, and we're going to ask, hey, and some of you are going to do it again. I'm really so pleased and proud of our church and great to be a part of it. My wife and I are already preparing. We know it's coming because she lives with me, but we're already preparing about this day, and I'm just letting you in on it, right? Because we want to be in the forefront of that. Part of that sacrificial giving. All right, number eight, last one. Spirituality. How spiritual are you? Which of a godly woman are you? Godly man. Proverbs 3 says, if you want favor with both God and man, notice he says that, both God and man. Oh, I want favor with God, I want favor with God, I want favor with God. A lot of people want favor with God. Does not want favor with both God and man, and a reputation for good judgment and common sense, then trust the Lord halfway. Trust the Lord when it's convenient. Trust the Lord when you think you're finally, oh, I better turn to God. No, trust the Lord completely. He goes on. He says, in everything you do, put God first. And this is a tough one for us. Because we bring God in when we get desperate, but he's not usually first on the list. And he'll direct you. And he'll crown your efforts with success. Sign me up for that deal. God crowning my efforts with success. Hey, one day I'm going to stand before him, and I'm not going to stand before you. I'm not going to stand before anybody else. And God's going to either crown me with success or go, man, you poached it. But look at how many people I pleased. Wrong audience. Wrong audience. I would have given you favor with both me and man if you would have put me first. But you chose them first. So Enjoy your applause. People are drawn by those who genuinely love God and put Him first, not by those who fake it. Again, a leader can spot a phony. Not this super syrupy, mystical, spiritual, weird, Jesus-y stuff. I don't think Jesus was weird. Did some crazy stuff. You got to admit, he did some crazy stuff. Spit in the mud and put it on some guy's eye. And whoa. But it wasn't weird. It wasn't weird. People don't like weird. Billy Graham. Again, just passed away a year ago. For 20 years, was on the 10 most admired men in the world list. Mother Teresa, always at the top. Proverbs 31 says, charm is deceptive and beauty disappears, but a woman who honors the Lord should be praised. She deserves the respect of everyone. Men, if your wife loves the Lord, you need to honor her. You need to put her, God first, her second. So many of the men don't put God first. And so the wife sometimes fits down here after the job, after the boat, after the golf, after, you know, somewhere down here. And the Bible uses some of the strongest language for us men. And I'm so excited about the marriage series we're going to start next week, Better Together. I hope you come and hope you invite some others that you might know need some relationship help, some strength in that area. We're going to give some standing out, going to do some of the teaching. We've got some other teachers that are going to be coming in, and it's going to be fantastic. But men, you cannot say you are godly. You cannot say I love God if you dishonor your wife. The Bible has some of the strongest language. It says, men, you are to lay down your life for your wife. And so many of you demand of your wife, if you don't follow me here, if you don't do this for me here, if you're not doing this for me here, then you really don't love me, then you really don't. And I look at that and I go, whoa, you know, take the God piece out. Just act like that's how you're going to act. But don't bring God into it because you're not a godly person. I don't care what comes out of your mouth. I don't care how often you go to church. If you're godly, if you're going to be spiritual, man, your wife is going to be God and then her. Right there. You're going to affirm her. You're going to build her up. You're going to lay down your life for her. You're going to serve her. No, man, it's so hard, Pastor. I know. You want a great marriage? Or you want a mediocre marriage? Or you want a less than marriage? Stop calling your wife to serve you, to do for you. Start putting her up here. She should be praised, deserves respect. How do you put God first? How do you put God first? How do you do it? Any ideas? Maybe start with the very first 7 minutes of your day. You knew I was going to bring it in, right? Maybe you start with the first 7 minutes of your day before you get out of bed. Say, God, you're first in my day. You're first in my life. You're first in who I in what I am and who I am. I don't have time to go on. Last verse says, rate yourself on your spirituality. Are you shallow? Are you shallow? You know, is your wife somewhere down here? You come out of your mouth, oh no, she's up here, but I treat her like this. Are you consistent and strong in your walk with God? Let me finish. One time, Andrew Carnegie was the richest man in America. Came from Scotland, penniless, dirt poor, built up one of the greatest steel industries, if not the greatest steel industry, history of the world, made millions and millions of dollars. A reporter asked him one day, Mr. Carney, you've got 43 millionaires that work for you. How did you attract such amazingly high-capacity people? He says, no, you don't understand. They weren't millionaires when they came to work for me. I developed them into millionaires. So the follow-up question to the reporter says, how did they become so great that you're able to pay them so well and they were able to make so much money? He goes, I see people like you're mining for gold. When you mine for gold, you move tons and tons of dirt to find 1 ounce of gold. Most people look at the dirt. I look for the gold. Let me ask you, what are you mining for in the people around you? You're always finding the wrong in your spouse. You're looking at the dirt. It's easy to find dirt, man. It's everywhere. Finding dirt in your employees, coworkers. Or you're mining for gold. Isn't that what Jesus did for you? He saw all the dirt. He says, no. There's a fisher of men in there. Everybody else said, but there's a gold in there. And he put a gift in you and he wants it released. And if you begin to look for the gold in the people around you, you'll begin to soar. Your capacity and your leadership will go really high. And folks, we will change the spiritual climate of this culture. In Jesus' name. Kevin, pray for us, brother.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you for teaching that this morning. And you can now turn in your notes because we're going to judge all of you on your scores. No, let us know, though, on your connection card which one you're working on this week and make a plan. There's some great questions in the back of your notes, too, to reflect and kind of get more into this. Do that with a friend or a spouse or your group. So let me pray for you, and then we'll break here. Jesus, thank you for this morning that we are allowed to come and learn and grow. Lord, I pray that we develop as leaders, that the plan that you've placed onto our heart this morning to grow, to challenge us, Lord, would take root, and that this week could begin walking out those leadership principles that we learned about this morning. Pray this in your name. Amen.